is absolutely no question about it. You're listening to The Swing Era. I'm your host, Bud Pearson, and I would welcome any comments or requests. Just email us. Our address is swingera@earthlink.net. That's swingera@earthlink.net. Back to The Swing Era, it's 1936 with Fletcher Henderson.
Thank you.
On the Swing Era, two swing gems by Fletcher Henderson, last up with an arrangement by Horace Henderson and under his leadership, I'm Rhythm Crazy Now, with Claude Jones trombone, Coleman Hawkins tenor, Bobby Starks trumpet, and the trombone of Dickie Wells from October 1933. And starting off, a later Henderson orchestra of March 1936 played Christopher Columbus. The arrangement by Brother Horace, Fletcher with his 1936 stars, Roy Eldridge's trumpet, Ed Cuffey's trombone, the tenor of Chewberry, and Buster Bailey's clarinet. Fletcher Henderson on the Swing Era.
Thank you.
You heard it on the Swing Era, three arrangements by Fletcher Henderson for his orchestra, Just Up, an April 1936 recording, Jangled Nerves, a fast-paced gem with solos by Chu Berry on tenor, Roy Eldridge's trumpet, the trombone of Ed Cuffey, and Buster Bailey's clarinet. And in the middle of the stack, we heard some different changes on Queer Notions, featuring Coleman Hawkins and Red Allen from September 1933. And starting the set, another classic in the Henderson swing tradition, a Decca record from September 1934 titled Shanghai Shuffle, featuring Buster Bailey's clarinet, Red Allen's trumpet, and the alto sax of Hilton Jefferson. And you heard it on the Swing Era. Last set on the Swing Era, here's Fletcher Henderson. Beep, 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 beep On the last set of the Swing Era, another romper by Fletcher Henderson and his orchestra, arranged by Benny Carter, we just heard Rhythm of the Tambourine, a March 1937 Vocalion record, with solos by Emmett Berry's trumpet, the tenor of Chewberry, no relation, Jerry Blake's clarinet, and the string bass of young Israel Crosby. And in the middle, Horace Henderson's composition and arrangement of Rug Cutter's Swing, from the September 1934 sessions, with everyone heard from Red's trumpet, Buster's clarinet, the trombones of Claude Jones and Keg Johnson, Jefferson's alto, and Ben Webster's tenor. A swing classic. And starting the last set, another Benny Carter arrangement, Limehouse Blues, again from September 1934, with the usual suspects soloing Red, Buster, Keg, and Ben. Benny Carter was quoted as saying everyone wanted to be a member of Fletcher's band. If you could make it with Fletcher, you could make it with anybody. And there you have it, Swing School with Fletcher Henderson. That's it, so many recordings and so little time to play them. But we'll go back to the Record Vault next week for more music. Till then, this is your host, Bud Pearson, hoping you've enjoyed Swing School 101 with Fletcher Henderson and his orchestra. If you did, join us here next week when we'll present more artists who created the styles and the sounds of the swing era. We'll see you then. And remember, it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing.
Redwood City, a broadcast service of the Sequoia Union High School District, home of the Woodside High School Wildcats. Online at kcea.org. It's time for Yesteryear, a look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll enjoy some adventure with Boston Blackie in the Reynolds stolen goods case. But first, on the lighter side, let's head over to Somerville with the Great Gildersleeve. The Great Gildersleeve was created by Harold Perry while still working on Fibber McGee and Molly in Chicago. The character became so popular that, in August of 1941, Gildersleeve broke away for his own Sunday night slot on NBC. When the program approached its 10th birthday, Harold Perry tired of the role and eventually dropped it. Into Perry's shoes came Willard Waterman, whose interpretation was so much like the original, it was startling. Perry's last program was June of 1950. When the show returned from vacation in September, Waterman was Gildersleeve. For its 1954-55 season, the program was a daily 15-minute offering, with each episode loosely connected. The program returned to 30 minutes in 1955, where it continued on Thursdays until 1958. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Harold Perry starring in The Great Gildersleeve and A Pal to Leroy from November of 1942. Another classic show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen, Sally Folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton, Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
The Great Gildersleeve. The Kraft Cheese Company, who also bring you Bing Crosby every Thursday night, present each week at this time, Harold Perry as The Great Gildersleeve, written by John Wheat. Now let's join our friend, the Great Gildersleeve, who has just put in a full week down at the water department and comes home ready for a weekend of well-earned rest and relaxation. Will he get it? Stay tuned to this station.
Leroy.
How did things go at the office?
Go? All right, I guess.
Here, take this chair. Aunt Hugh must be tired.
No, sit still, sit still.
Oh, I don't need it. I was just doing a little studying.
Studying in the afternoon?
I was just trying to get a little ahead.
Yeah.
The evening paper's right for your chair there. Can I get your slippers, Uncle Mort?
This isn't Father's Day, is it? By the way, when I came up the walk here, I almost fell over the rake. I don't suppose you have any idea how it got there.
Oh, gosh, Uncle, I'm sorry. That was careless of me. I must have left it there when I was raking the leaves.
Raking the leaves? Did you rake the leaves? I don't recall having said anything about raking leaves.
No, you didn't, but I could see they were piling up, and I knew you'd be tired when you got home. by the way, Unc, when you get time...
Yes?
I got my report card today. There's no hurry! I'll just leave it on the mantel here.
No, give it here.
I don't have to get it signed till Monday.
Give it here.
Okay, here it is. Gee, I better go put the rake away before somebody falls over.
Wait a minute, Leroy.
I'll be right back.
Arithmetic, grammar, geography, department. Leroy! I was calling Leroy, my dear.
Anything I can do?
Yes. Tell me what on earth to do about Leroy.
What do you mean?
I just got his report card.
How did he come out?
4F. Look at that darn thing. I don't know, Marjorie. He won't study. He gets into trouble. Maybe I ought to send him away to military school.
Oh, no.
Well, he needs somebody to make him toe the line.
You know what I think he needs, Uncle Mort?
What?
I think he needs you.
What do you mean?
Well, I think he needs the understanding and companionship of an older person whom he respects.
That's not me.
Of course it is.
He has a funny way of showing it, then. Every time I say anything serious to him, all I get is, "Are you kidding?"
Oh, well, you know he doesn't mean anything by that. He just has a chip on his shoulder because he always feels he's in the doghouse.
Well, he usually is.
I know, but think. When you were Leroy's age, didn't you ever bring home a bad report card?
Oh, brother. You're right, my dear. I guess I haven't been fair to the boy. I was thinking just the other day, I ought to try and spend more time with him and pal around with him more.
I think it'd be wonderful for him if you did.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to start in right now, and I'm going to devote the whole weekend to him. I'll make a pal out of Leroy if it kills me. Called him all over the neighborhood. He's hiding. That's what he's doing. Wait till I catch that kid.
You were going to make a pal out of him now, remember?
I can't make a pal out of him until I get a hold of him, can I? Leroy?
Looking for me, Uncle?
Come in here and sit down, young man. I'd like to have a talk with you.
Uncle Maud?
Come in and sit down, will you, Leroy? I'd like to have a talk with you.
Uncle Maud would like to have a talk.
Yes, sit down, my boy.
It's not my fault, Uncle. The teacher doesn't like me. I don't know why. She's just got it in for me. I didn't do anything.
Wait a minute. Let's not forget about that report card, shall we, Leroy?
Huh?
I mean, after all, a lot of us get bad report cards. Let's just let bygones be bygones.
Are you kidding?
Leroy!
What?
Well, he started it. Let's not use that expression anymore, shall we, Leroy? Let's find another one.
Okay, Uncle.
Leroy, I've been thinking. You know, you and I ought to get to know each other better. I mean, break down and be pals. What do you say?
Okay, by me, Unc.
Yes. I wonder if we couldn't find a better word than okay, too, huh? Shall we try?
Okay.
Let it go. Yes, I think we ought to try to do more things together, you and I, Leroy. You know, go off by ourselves and get away from some of these women around here.
All right, I'll leave, Uncle
Mort. Come here a minute, my boy. Sit down here beside me.
I'll sit over here.
All right, anywhere. You know, Leroy, I'd like you to think of me as a human being.
Well, I try to, Unc.
Yes, I think the first time I ever realized my father was human was one time when he took me duck shooting. That's why I thought you and I ought to go on some sort of a little expedition.
You mean we're going duck shooting, huh?
Well, no, but I thought we might go to the Museum of the Historical Society.
Oh.
Have you ever been there?
No. Have you?
Well, they tell me it's very interesting. Lots of, well, you know, historical stuff. What do you say?
Couldn't we go duck shooting?
Would you rather go duck shooting than go to the museum?
Are you kidding? Oh, sorry, Uncle.
Yeah, well, that's all right. As a matter of fact, Floyd down at the barbershop was telling me he goes duck shooting out at Skinner's Pond.
I bet there's a million ducks there.
Yeah. Floyd's got a blind there. He might even lend me his dog. He has a very fine bird dog.
Can we go tomorrow, Unc?
Well, it would mean getting up awfully early, Leroy. 4 o'clock in the morning.
I don't care. I'll get up at 2.
You get up at 2 and you're going to go alone.
Okay, 4 o'clock. How about it? Can we go?
If you'd like to. And if Floyd lends us his dog.
Unc, you're swell.
Yes. I've decided this is going to be your weekend, Leroy. Anything you want to do, we'll do.
Oh, boy, you're super, Unc. I tell you what, we'll go duck shooting in the morning.
Yes?
When we get back, we'll play touch football with the gang. After that, we'll go out to the zoo. And there's a carnival only about 2 blocks from there. I don't know. Maybe we'll go to the movies. And in the evening, we'll go to the basketball game.
Ooh.
And if there's any time left, we might even go to your museum.
Are you kidding? Yes, what is it now, Leroy?
Why do they call this thing we're sitting in a blind?
Because only a blind fool would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to sit in one. Hold the dog, Leroy.
Down, Senator. Sit down, boy.
Nope, stop licking my face, Senator. Leroy, hold on to him. You're the custodian of the dog, you know.
Okay, Unc. When do I get to shoot?
Shoot? Later.
Quiet, Senator. Quiet. You'll scare the ducks.
What ducks?
Oh, they'll be coming.
Yeah, any of them come over, remember what I told you.
Well, they ought to be here any minute. We've been waiting for 2 hours.
2 hours is nothing in the life of a duck, young man. They don't come over on schedule, you know.
They usually come over about dawn. It's so cloudy, I don't know how we're going to know when dawn is here.
Oh, easy. You just wet a finger and hold it up.
Uncle Mort, you couldn't pass the test for a Cub Scout.
Yeah. Joke, Leroy, joke.
Oh, hey, you know what? It's beginning to rain.
You don't have to be so happy about it.
Ah, cheer up, Unc. It's wonderful weather for ducks.
It's Oh, my hands are cold, my ears are cold, my feet are wet, and so is my cigar. Yeah, that's duck shooting. Pass me that thermos of cocoa, will you?
Sorry, Unc, we've drunk it all.
Oh. Well, I guess there's nothing to do then but sit here and wait for death.
Look, Unc.
Where?
Look at Senator. He's sniffing the air.
Just trying to find out which way the wind blows. That's a senator for you.
No, look. Yeah? He's stiffening up. I think he smells something.
Yeah, he's pointing. Leroy, that's a very fine dog.
Wonder what he sees.
Oh, he can sense him long before he sees him. Now get ready and watch the way I do this.
When do I get to shoot, Unc?
Later. Remember, you always get him on the rise and always shoot a little ahead of him.
So they run into the bullets?
That's the idea.
How do you train them to do that?
Quiet, Leroy, quiet. Ready. There. Hey, duck!
Where? I don't see it.
No, I mean duck down so I can aim.
Oh, what are you aiming at?
Off there. It looks just like a speck now, but it's coming this way. Isn't it, Senator? Yeah.
Unc, that's a P-38.
You. Oh, I'm certainly glad you told me.
Boy, if you'd taken a shot at him, he'd come right down here and...
I just did that to show you, my boy. You can't be too careful in handling a gun. Well, we might as well relax again, I guess.
Come on, Senator, relax, boy. Funny, he's still pointing.
Probably frozen stiff.
No, I think he's pointing at the decoys.
Huh?
Hey, could I take a shot at one of them?
At the decoys? You may not.
Well, how about if we put a tin can on a stump there?
We came out here to shoot ducks, and we'll shoot ducks or nothing. Oh, look out. Here comes the ducks, Leroy.
Hey, it's my turn.
Let's go.
Don't shoot the dog.
Oh, I got one. I got one. Look at him drop, Leroy.
That's no fair. You said it was my turn.
You know, it's funny. You'll sit out in the duck blind for hours, and you're cold and wet, and you wish you hadn't come. And you get one duck, and everything's changed. Oh, it's the most wonderful feeling in the world.
Yeah, but how are we going to get the duck, Unc? He's dropped in the swamp.
Don't you worry about that. You just watch Senator there. He'll find it. Yes, sir. There's not a prettier sight in the world than a well-trained retriever in action. You'll see, my boy. He'll pick that duck up in his mouth and bring it back here without harming a feather.
I think he's found it, Unc. Yep, he's got it.
Good boy, Senator. Good boy. Now watch him bring it back. Hey!
He's sitting down!
Hey!
He's eating it!
Come back here, you! Oh! Bring back that duck!
The Great Gildersleeve will be with us again in a few seconds. But first...
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now let's get back to the Great Gildersleeve. After a long, hard day in the duck blind, he comes trudging home with wet feet, a sore shoulder, and the mangled remains of a duck, to find that it's only 9 o'clock in the morning.
Hello, Water Commissioner. I see you've been in the water.
Oh, you here, Judge?
Glad to see you up so bright and early, Commissioner.
Yeah, funny how you always get in here in time for breakfast. This time we fooled you. I had mine at 4 o'clock.
So I heard. Marjorie told me I had a little bite with her.
You so?
I think it's a fine thing you're doing for Leroy, Gildy, devoting your whole weekend to him. You're going to get a lot of satisfaction out of it.
Am I?
You bet you are. What wouldn't I give for a boy I could make a pal of?
I'll lend you Leroy. Do you know what he's got planned for this weekend?
What?
5 hours in a duck blind with just a warm-up. Right now, I'm supposed to play touch football. This afternoon, there's the zoo and the carnival.
Sounds like fun.
Fun? Why, there's 10 miles of walking at the zoo and another 5 miles at the carnival, besides getting sick on the loop-the-loop. Then tonight, a basketball game, and somewhere we squeeze in a double feature. What am I going to do, Judge?
Well, you'll just have to go through with it, I guess, Gildy. You can't let the boy down.
No, but I can get sick.
Oh, it's nothing the matter with you, Gildy.
No, but there's going to be.
Boy.
What is it, my dear? Don't say anything about it, Judge.
Leroy's looking for you.
Leroy, oh, yes, I know, I know.
Hey, Unc, in here, Leroy. Where are you? I got real was going to play football.
Now, Leroy, it's raining.
A little drizzle. They never call a game off for that.
Sure, what's a little drizzle?
You keep out of this, Judge. Perhaps you'd like to go out and play with the boys.
I'd be delighted to, if it weren't for my gout.
Well, so would I, if it weren't for the cold I think I'm catching.
Oh, you promise.
Now, Leroy, you can't ask Uncle Mort to go outdoors if he's catching a cold.
You're absolutely right.
That's you.
Better try that one again, Gildy. That wasn't so good.
Okay, you go mind your own business.
I was just going, Gildy. I was on my way. Take good care of yourself, old man. Marjorie, I'd make him go to bed if I were you.
I was thinking of that.
Not a bad idea. I may do it.
Best thing in the world for a cold. Bed, a hot mustard plaster, and a good stiff dose of castor oil.
You.
With that thought, I'll leave you. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Judge.
May drop in a little later to see how your patient's getting on.
See that you don't, you old goat.
Come on, Uncle Mort. Upstairs.
Yes. I hope you won't mind, Leroy, if I do go upstairs and lie down for a little while. There's been a lot of this going on around here. Besides, now that I'm water commissioner, my health is a matter of public concern. I owe it to the town, I owe it to you, and take care of myself. You understand?
Sure, we understand. Now go ahead, Uncle Mort. You get right into bed, and I'll come up in a minute and see that you're comfortable.
All right, my dear. If you think I ought to, I may see you later, Leroy.
Yeah, take it easy, Unc. Who does he think he's fooling?
There, you comfortable now, Mr. Gildersleeve?
As comfortable as I can hope to be, I guess, Bertie.
Now, you've got your book, you've got your magazine, you've got the radio beside your bed. Is there anything else you can think of?
No, my dear, thank you. Don't bother about me. I'll be all right, I hope.
I'll leave this little bell on the table so you can ring it if you want anything.
Cute, isn't it? Thank you, Bertie. You go ahead. I'll make out here somehow.
Try to get a little sleep now, Uncle Moore.
Yes, you do that, Mr. Gildersleeve.
I will if I can. Oh,
Yes, Uncle Moore?
What was it now? Oh, yes. I wonder if you'd get me a glass of water.
Oh, right away.
Yeah. You want to drink plenty of water for a cold. If the water commissioner doesn't drink it, who will? Bertie!
Bertie, will you see what he wants now?
Yes, sir. Did you ring?
I was thinking, Bertie. I guess I oughtn't eat anything too heavy for lunch.
Goodness, Mr. Gildersleeve, it ain't time for lunch yet.
I know, but how long will it be?
Well, it's only a little after 10 now.
Well, maybe just a little glass of that V8 vegetable juice, huh? And some crackers and some cheese.
I don't know if you ought to eat all them things, Mr. Gildersleeve, if you're sick.
Be quiet. Here comes Marjorie.
There's your water, Uncle
Moore. You're too good to me, my dear. You shouldn't be doing all these things for me, really. I wonder if you'd bring me a box of Kleenex and put it beside my pillow.
Yes, Uncle Mort.
And ask Leroy if he'll bring me some cigars, Optimos. But don't make a special trip for it.
Yes, Uncle Mort.
Bertie, you know what I think would be good for my cold?
What's that?
You remember those little butterscotch pecan tarts you used to make?
There'll be none of that, Uncle Mort.
Oh.
Bertie, you come out of there.
Yes, ma'am. Doggone, ain't nobody can enjoy being sick like a man. They want more service.
Service? Here I am, flat on my back, and that's the kind of sympathy I get.
Hello, Marjorie, honey.
Oh.
I hope you don't mind me just walking right in like this.
Oh, not at all, Mrs. Benson.
It's her.
I won't stay but a minute. Judge Hooker told me about your uncle's illness, and I just had to run right over.
Well, that was nice of you. I don't think it's anything very serious.
Oh, it isn't, huh?
Well, I'll just peek in for a second if you think it's all right.
Well, please do. I know he'd love to see
you. Oh, I wish I had a comb.
Throckmorton, you poor boy.
Oh, hello, Leela.
Did you get a nasty bug?
No, it's nothing, really. I feel better already, now that you're here.
Oh, you. I wanted to bring you over some calf's foot jelly.
Oh, fine. I'll eat it with my lunch.
But I didn't have the faintest idea how to make it.
Oh, well, it was sweet of you anyway.
So I brought you a box of Zuzus. It was the only thing I could find in the house.
Oh, thank you, Zuzus. I'll just put it under my pillow where I can get at it.
Oh, I think it's just terrible you getting sick like this. I can't tell you how disappointed I am. I was hoping for you to take me to the Halloween party at the country club.
Party?
Oh, it sounds wonderful. I just love bobbing for apples, don't you?
Yes, I'm crazy about it.
And I suppose they'll play post office and silly games like that.
I can think of worse games than post office.
If you only hadn't gone and gotten sick. Oh, well, I dare say I can get somebody else. Judge Hooker or somebody.
Leela?
Yes?
What time is that party?
8:00. Oh, but goodness, what difference does it make now?
I think I can make it.
Oh, I wouldn't dream of letting...
No, I'm feeling a lot better already. It was those Zuzus. I think by 7:30 tonight, I'll be all right.
Oh, but Throckmorton...
I'll be there at 8.
I can only find one cigar.
Oh, thank you, my boy.
Well, Throckmorton, I mustn't tire you. I do hope you'll get well soon.
And I will. Don't worry.
Goodbye now.
Goodbye, Mrs. Ransom.
Bye.
I'll be seeing you.
How you feeling, Unc?
Oh, a little better, I think, Leroy, but none too vigorous.
Well, maybe when you've had some lunch, you'll feel more like going to the zoo.
I wouldn't count on that. You have to watch these things, you know, possible complications.
Oh, Father Uncle Mort now, Leroy.
Marjorie, what have you got in that glass?
Just orange juice.
Yeah, you can't fool me.
Oh, Uncle Mort, don't be a baby.
How do I know it isn't castor oil?
Because we haven't any.
Oh.
I had to send out for some. Besides, I'm not going to give it to you till the doctor gets here.
Doctor? What do I want with the doctor?
Oh, just to be on the safe side. Possible complications, you know.
Huh?
I think you ought to have your chest examined.
I think I ought to have my head examined.
Right in here. I brought you a visitor, Uncle Mort.
Oh, hello, Peavy.
Hello, Mr. Gildersleeve.
I thought Mr. Peavy might cheer you up.
Yeah, I'll try. Well, you're looking a little peaked, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Nothing much the matter with me, Peavy. What's that you got there?
Castor oil.
You mean all that is castor oil?
I brought you several varieties so you could pick the one you like.
Peavy, all castor oil is the same and you know it.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. There's the regular and the tasteless, and there's this new number. It's got raspberry flavor. Very nice.
Peavy, are you trying to tell me that you have some castor oil that tastes like raspberries?
Well, I don't think it would fool anybody.
I guess not. Well, what about the tasteless variety? Is it really tasteless?
Well, not entirely. Tasteless castor oil is kind of a trade expression, like easy payment plan.
Easy
payment.
Well, Mort, this is Dr. Pettibone to see you.
Yes, the invalid in here. Hello, Gildersleeve.
Hello, Doctor.
Afternoon, Peavy. Nice weather.
Yes, it is, Doctor. Of course, it rained a little this morning. But in general, the weather has been very good. But then, of course, that's bad for business.
If you look at it that way.
It's really been quite discouraging, but I look for a change in the near future. Mrs. Peavy's knee twitched this morning, and that generally means a spell of real pneumonia weather. Goodbye, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Goodbye, Peavy.
Well, Gildersleeve, I see you finally got what's coming to you.
What are you talking about?
Yes, sir, I've been telling you what would happen if you didn't cut down on your smoking and your eating. Man your age can't act like a 12-year-old, you know.
How do you know I'm sick? You haven't even taken my temperature.
I took it 2 years ago. If you'd taken my advice at the time, you'd be a well man today.
I am a well man. Here, feel my pulse.
I know your pulse like a book. I hope you're going to take this collapse as a warning, Gildersleeve.
Collapse? Doctor, aren't you even going to look at my tongue?
Don't need to. Now you listen to me. How many cigars you been smoking?
I cut down, Doc.
How many?
I'm down to 12 a day now.
From now on, no more than 3.
I can't live on 3 cigars a day.
Yes, you can, and with the diet I'm going to give you, you'll love it.
Diet?
Yes, sir. Breakfast, dry toast and tea, no cream or sugar.
I'll starve to death.
Lunch, hard-boiled egg and plain lettuce salad. No oil. Dinner, one lamb chop, no fat. One potato, no gravy. After a week of that...
No Gildersleeve.
Nonsense. You'll like it. Well, I'll call you in a day or so. And incidentally, it wouldn't do you any harm to get some rest. I'm going to ask your niece to keep you in bed for a couple of days.
Oh, no!
Oh, yes. As my father used to say to his patients, take care of your body, my man. You'll never get another one.
Oh, brother, how did I get into this? How am I going to get out of it?
got to hurry. It's almost 8.
Yeah, you had better hurry, my dear.
You sure you don't mind being alone?
Alone? Not at all, my dear. Solitude can be very enjoyable at times. Are you sure Leroy is gone?
Yes, he went to the basketball game.
At Bertie, too?
Yes, she's out for the evening.
Then run along, my dear, and have a good time.
Good night, Uncle Moore.
Good night. Holy smokes, I got about 3 minutes to get dressed and get over to the Widow Ransom's. Where are my pants? Ooh, I can't find my pants. Oh, here they are. I thought it was a coat. Oh, what's that? Marjorie coming back? Ooh, get into bed quick, fatso. Is that you, my dear?
No, it's me, Uncle.
Leroy, what happened? Did you forget something?
No, I didn't forget anything.
What are you doing back here?
Well, you remember what we talked about last night, Uncle?
About what?
About you and me being pals.
Oh, yes, of course I do.
Well, I just wouldn't feel right about going off and leaving you here all alone when you're sick, Unc.
You shouldn't feel that way, Leroy.
Well, I do. After all, you didn't get to go to the zoo or anything. So I decided I'd stay here and keep you company.
That's very touching, my boy, and I appreciate it. I really do. But I wish you'd forget about me and go to that basketball game.
Oh, I can see a basketball game anytime. I heard a joke today, Unc. Would you like to hear a joke? Maybe to cheer you up.
Well,
what's black and white and red all over? Give up?
Very good.
I haven't heard the answer yet. A newspaper.
Oh, that's even better. Leroy, will you go to that basketball game?
You like that? Here's another. What is it that'll go up the chimney down or down the chimney up but won't go up the chimney up?
Leroy, I'm in no mood to sit here and listen to corny riddles.
Well, now you're beginning to sound more like yourself, Unc. You must be getting better.
Yes.
I was beginning to worry about you there.
Young man, you might as well know there's nothing whatever the matter with me, whatever.
I know that.
What? I'm getting up right now, and I'm not going to any basketball game.
I know that, too.
Huh?
I know where you're going, and I know who you're going with.
Oh, you do, eh? Then what are you doing here?
Well, Unc, how about a little advance?
Yes. Leroy, this is blackmail. But I'm glad to pay it. At least now we understand each other. Awake, Leroy?
Yeah. How'd you make out, Uncle?
Oh, I had a very enjoyable evening, thank you. There's one thing I'd like to know.
What's that?
There was a car parked in front of Mrs. Ransom's house when I got there.
I know, Judge Hooker's.
Yes. Was it you, by any chance, who let the air out of the judge's tires?
Well, Halloween, you know.
Leroy, that was not a nice thing to do. I only hope I can do as much for you sometime. Good night. Good night, everybody.
Heard on this program was composed and conducted by Billy Mills. This is Frank Bingman speaking for the Kraft Cheese Company and inviting you to tune in again next week for the further adventures of the Great Gildersleeve.
From November of 1942, it's been Harold Perry starring in The Great Gildersleeve. In a moment, some adventure with Boston Blackie in the case of Reynolds' stolen goods from September of 1948 as Yesteryear continues.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Boston Blackie, one of the most memorable names of radio and early TV, was radio's answer to the B-movie. In fact, the character started in a B-film, Columbia's Meet Boston Blackie, in 1941. By 1944, Chester Morris, the screen Blackie, came to NBC with a Boston Blackie radio program sponsored by Rinso and announced by Harlow Wilcox as a summer replacement for Amos and Andy. Boston Blackie was a private detective with a flair for the smart comment. Billed as enemy to those who make him an enemy, friend to those who have no friends, Blackie liked nothing more than making the cops look crazy. Richard Lane played Faraday, and Leslie Woods played Blackie's girlfriend, Mary. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Boston Blackie and the case of Reynolds' stolen goods from September of 1948. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
How nice is the price?
$5,000.
Oh, it's too nice.
Well, almost everything in my store is on the expensive side, sir.
Yes, I realize that, but can't you offer me something that isn't quite so far over on that side?
Well, we do have a few inexpensive things, but still over $1,000.
Oh, this is for a friend of mine, a nurse, Mary Wesley. She's the practical type.
I see.
If I threw $1,000 into a present for her, she'd throw me out a 20-story window.
Well, tell me what kind of a person she is, and perhaps I can suggest something.
Well, she's a simple type. Oh. Like simple people like me, and simple prices.
Like what?
Well, actually, she'd be angry if I spent more than 10 cents.
10 cents? I know exactly what you mean.
You do?
In this drawer here, I have just the thing for you, sir.
What is that, an electric light?
Diamond necklace, sir, worth, as you could probably guess, not one penny less than $10,000.
I can guess.
But to you, sir, the price is 10 cents.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now back to Dick Calmer as Boston Blackie. Enemy to those who make him an enemy. Friend to those who have no friend.
The necklace is worth $10,000, but I can have it for 10 cents, did you say?
Yes. You know what I mean, of course.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. But I, here, let me look at it.
Sure. Here you are. It's
certainly worth the price you ask. But I don't have a dime on me at the moment.
Very funny.
I can go to the bank and make a withdrawal, though. I'll be back in an hour. How much now?
You know.
How much is
I was only joking, Mr.
Blackie, Boston Blackie.
Yes, Blackie. I was just going along with your joke. You realize that, of course.
Oh, of course.
Now, what else can I show you?
I'm really interested in that necklace you're holding, and don't put it away.
But the price is $10,000.
Not 10 cents?
Not 10 cents. Now, how about a nice pair of earrings?
I'm not interested in earrings because your offer of a $10,000 necklace for 10 cents keeps ringing in my ears.
Hello?
Hello, Louise.
Yes, John.
Louise, something's happened. Afraid I won't be home in time for dinner.
Well, I understand, dear. I'm not fixing anything that can't wait till the last minute anyhow. But why, John? What's happened?
Well, I can't tell you.
Why?
I just can't. I don't know the consequences just yet.
The consequences? John, what have you done?
Something awfully foolish.
What?
Boston Blackie was in my store this afternoon trying to buy something, only...
Yes.
Only I didn't know it was Boston Blackie until he told me who he was. Then I realized what a terrible mistake I'd made.
John, you're not making one bit of sense.
I know. There isn't time to explain. I have to see someone right away.
Who?
Well, I can't tell you that either, but...
Oh, John.
Listen.
Yes?
There's an envelope in my desk drawer.
Hmm?
If I'm not home by midnight tonight, get that envelope and open it. The letter inside will tell you and the police everything.
But, Mr. Grant, I didn't know it was Boston Blackie until it was too late. I thought it was someone sent there to buy the stolen necklace.
He gave the password when he asked for something for 10 cents. When he looked surprised and didn't produce the $5,000 you want for the necklace, I covered up my mistake by saying I was just joking. At least I'm pretty sure I covered it up. I'm sure he left thinking it was a joke, but anyhow, wouldn't you have made the same mistake?
No. Now I'll accept your resignation. I'm not going to use you anymore. Can't afford to use people who make mistakes.
You sent for me, Mr. Grant?
Yes, Carter, come here.
Who's the sack with the drooped face?
A former member of our organization, Carter, John Reynolds.
Oh.
Mr. Reynolds, Mr. Carter.
How do you do? A former member, huh?
Yes.
Oh, sure. I get what you mean, Mr. Grant.
Mm-hmm.
Is it all right if I go now, Mr. Grant?
Yes.
You said you were through with me.
Yes, I am, but Carter here will show you the way out.
But I know the way out. I found my way in.
When you're no longer a member of this organization, John, you go out another way.
Yeah, this way, Reynolds.
All right.
Right through this door here.
Thanks, Mr. Grant. Thanks a lot for not making this any worse than it is. Now where?
Yeah, right down these steps into the basement. Let you go first, huh?
Very well. It's awfully dark down here. Isn't there some sort of light?
I don't need a light. All I need is this gun.
What gun?
Yeah, the kind that goes bang, bang, like this. Now maybe you know what Mr. Grant meant when he said you were going out a different way.
Faraday, this is one time you have no right to order me out of your office. I was in on this case before you were.
I know you're out of here to get your head examined. You expect me to believe that story about a $10,000 necklace for 10 cents, Blackie?
Well, will you believe 20 cents?
No, not even 30.
Well, then let's start all over again at 10 cents. Because that's what I was asked to pay for the necklace, and that's why I'm in on this case.
Now, why would Reynolds have offered you that necklace for a dime? And how are you sure the dead man is the same John Reynolds you talked to yesterday?
Because I saw his picture in the paper this morning.
Okay. That still doesn't answer my first question.
About the dime, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Faraday, he wasn't selling me that necklace for a dime.
Well, now you agree with me.
No, I'm trying to explain something to you. I was joking around with Reynolds about the high prices in the store and accidentally hit on a code of some kind when I made a crack about buying something for a dime.
A code for what?
Well, maybe to identify myself as a buyer of stolen jewelry.
Reynolds has no record as a fence.
No, of course not. But you don't know all the fences in town. And the ones you do know are being watched so closely they can't operate.
Well, what happened to Reynolds is no joke. And the fact that his letter is missing is no joke either.
What letter?
A letter he had in his house. He phoned his wife before he was killed, told her to open it, give it to the police if anything happened to him.
I see.
Only we can't find the letter.
Well, you've really been working on this case, haven't you?
No more than I work on the others.
Well, that letter, missing or not, proves that Reynolds was in some kind of an illegitimate business, and also that he didn't work alone.
Yeah.
His partners, obviously, killed him for his mistake.
They did.
What else did his wife tell you?
Plenty, but I'm not going to tell you.
You don't have to, Faraday.
Why?
Because I'm going to see the wife of the dead man and put some life into this case.
Just a minute. Come in.
Mrs. Reynolds?
Yes, come on in.
You seem to be a little busy.
Yes, I am. I'm looking for something. Who are you?
Boston Blackie, Mrs. Reynolds.
Oh, no wonder you look familiar. I thought I knew you.
And I think I know what you're looking for. The letter your late husband told you to turn over to the police.
Yes, I am, and I've looked everywhere for it. No, it's not in here.
Where did he say it was when he found you?
In the desk drawer, right here.
Mm-hmm.
I've been looking for hours.
The police looked for it, too, didn't they?
Yes, they searched the house from top to bottom.
Well, if the police couldn't find it, I don't think you can.
No, I suppose not, but I'm going to keep on looking. Not in here either. Oh. Well, Blackie, I guess you want to ask me some questions.
No, not just now. Some other time.
Oh.
And not so much about your husband's death as what he did for a living.
He was a jeweler.
Yes, I know. But was he legitimate?
What?
He offered me a $10,000 necklace yesterday for 10 cents. and I have a hunch why.
Oh, well, I'm sure that was just a joke, Blackie. John had a very strange sense of humor.
And I have a good sense of rackets, Mrs. Reynolds.
Hmm?
But we'll talk about that some other time. Well, goodbye, and good luck in finding the letter.
Thank you. I'm going to keep on looking.
And while you're looking for the letter, I'm going to be looking for his killer. Goodbye.
Goodbye. He's gone, Mr. Grant.
Yes. I thought I heard him leave.
You were right when you saw him coming up the walk. It was Boston Blackie.
Well, I hope you put on a good act and made him think you're still looking for that letter.
Yes. I was searching the drawers in the desk when he came in, just as I was doing when the police got here.
Good girl. Too bad you even had to mention the letter to the police, though.
Oh, but I thought it was safer.
Hmm?
There's no telling who else John mentioned the letter to, Mr. Grant.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Incidentally, Mr. Grant, here is the letter.
All right.
Don't you think you ought to destroy it?
Yes, I think I will. Did you read it?
Yes, I did.
Surprised to know John worked for me, too, weren't you?
Well, I certainly was. But wouldn't he have been surprised if he had ever known that while he was selling for you, his wife was stealing for you?
I guess he would have been at that. Where's the match?
Right here on the table.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Mr. Grant, why don't you let the people working for you know each other?
Well, if one is caught, he or she can't tell the police about the others.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, here goes the letter up in smoke. I love to watch a fire burn, don't you?
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see Boston Blackie if he could guess that letter was found and destroyed.
Yes.
He'd burn, too.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now back to Boston Blackie. Jeweler John Reynolds makes the mistake of trying to sell stolen goods to Boston Blackie when Blackie jokingly asks for something for a dime, the secret password. The gang leader has Reynolds killed. Always fearing death, Reynolds kept a letter in his home which told all. So he phoned his wife to turn the letter over to the police in the event something happened to him. The wife, however, is also a member of the gang. Neither Blackie nor Faraday know this, and as we return to our story...
It's open.
Blackie, may I come in?
Oh, yes, Miss Reynolds, of course.
Thank you. I just have to talk to you, Blackie.
Well, I'm glad you're here, because I was just about to phone you and ask you if you'd had any luck in finding that letter.
No, Blackie, I haven't. But I got a phone call just a little while ago.
From whom?
I don't know. The man wouldn't say. But he said if I found the letter and didn't destroy it, the same thing that happened to John would happen to me.
Well, you need police protection.
Well...
And that gives me an idea, too.
Yes?
We could say you had found the letter, and that would bring someone after you. Only we'd be there to see that you were safe.
Oh, no, Blackie. I'd be afraid to do that.
No need to be.
Couldn't you do something to catch the killers before they do something to me?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm working on a plan right now, Mrs. Reynolds.
Yes, what?
I plan to let it be known around the underworld that I'm carrying $50,000 worth of jewelry.
But will that help in any way?
Yes, Mrs. Reynolds. I think it will.
Why?
But I won't tell you why until I've told you it has.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Grant.
Yeah?
Oh, Mr. Grant, this is Louise.
Oh, nothing for you today, Louise.
But I have something for you.
Oh?
I saw Blackie and gave him the story about the threatening phone call.
And?
Well, he still thinks I'm looking for the letter.
Good.
And he has a plan he thinks will catch you.
Oh, does he?
Uh-huh.
Did he try to calm your fears by telling you his plan?
He sure did. That's certainly proof he doesn't suspect me of anything, isn't it, Mr. Grant?
Certainly is. What is his plan?
Well, he has an idea John was mixed up with the jewel thief. Uh-huh. So he's going around town with $50,000 worth of jewelry.
What?
But first, he's going to let the underworld know in hopes he'll be held up.
Stupid fellow. I thought he was more clever than that.
It certainly isn't going to get him anywhere, is it?
Well, of course not. Are you sure you tricked him into telling you his plan, or did he tell you much too willingly?
Oh, Mr. Grant. You know I can get anything out of anybody. Why do you ask?
Because I think we might relieve Blackie of his jewelry. I think we might. Thanks for the tip, Louise.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
How long is Blackie going to be in that jewelry store, Mr. Grant?
Patience, Carter. He'll be out pretty soon.
Okay, and I'll do what you say. But I think we're nuts.
Why?
He told Louise his plans. He'll know she tipped us off.
Oh, no, he won't. In the first place, he fell for the phony story I sent Louise to give him.
Is there a threatening phone call about the letter?
Mm-hmm. And besides, every mug in the city knows that Blackie is carrying 50 grand in rocks.
If he was leveling with Louise and really let the word get passed around. Hey, here he comes.
Good. Now you stay back in the alley and let him pass us before you step out and hit him.
Right.
All right, you ready?
Yeah, okay.
Shh. Now.
And how?
All right, quick. Grab that briefcase he dropped and let's beat it through the alley.
Got it, let's go.
What was I hit with, Faraday? A pile driver?
I ought to hit you with every law in the book. Against being a public nuisance and cluttering up the city sidewalks.
Well, I ought to sue the police department for bringing me to your office.
Suit yourself.
I knew I wasn't in heaven, though, when I woke up and saw you.
You were so right. Well, what happened to you? Who hit you?
I don't know.
You're supposed to be such a speedy character.
Yeah.
Well, why were you knocked out? Do you know that?
Yes, for the briefcase I was carrying.
The briefcase?
And it was $50,000 worth of jewelry.
What? You were robbed of $50,000 worth of jewelry.
Yes, but I don't mind.
You don't mind?
No, why should I? The jewelry didn't belong to me. I borrowed it from a friend.
Well, we sure got home okay with this stuff for Blackie's, huh, Mr. Grant?
Yeah. All right, put the briefcase on the table there, Card. Open it up, and let's have a look at it.
Sure. What a haul.
Yeah.
50 grand at one time.
Yeah?
We've never done anything like this before.
Well, that's the reason I wanted to do it. One big haul is much better than having to get one piece at a time. All right, open the briefcase, Card.
Sure. Look at that stuff.
Yeah.
Looks like it's even worth more than 50 grand.
Yeah, say, look a piece of it closely here. This piece, for instance.
Oh, sure, beautiful. Sure worth plenty.
Carter, we're going to see Louise.
We are?
Yes, I want to reward her for this little deal tonight.
Hello, Mr. Grant. Come on in.
Thank you, Louise.
Well, I can tell by the smile on your face that everything worked out all right.
Beautifully, Louise, beautifully.
I'm glad.
Yes, I've come to congratulate you. And also to give you a promotion.
Promotion, Mr. Grant?
Well, it might be called that. A change in status is another name for it.
Oh. Well, I'm certainly glad to hear everything worked out, but I didn't expect to be given a reward.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was given something I didn't expect either.
Huh?
Come on. Carter's waiting for us outside in the car.
Carter? Who's he?
One of my most trusted men.
Oh, but I thought you didn't want any of your workers to know each other.
Well, your acquaintance with this member of my company won't be for very long.
Mr. Grant, there's something about the look on your face that I don't like. There's
something about what you tried to do to us this afternoon that I don't like. In fact, I don't like any part of it.
Any part of what? I thought you said...
You didn't think anything. You knew it.
What?
I sent you to Blackie to talk him into giving away any plans that he might have. And instead, you double-crossed us. You turned to him. Tried to get rid of us by making us walk into a trap.
Well, Mr. Grant, I didn't.
I told you just what Blackie told me, and you got $50,000 in jewels out of it, didn't you?
Phony jewels, Louise.
Phony?
Only when Carter and I get you out in the country, the bullet he puts into you is going to be real.
Blackie and his crazy ideas. Don't get so far behind that car, you'll lose it, Matthews.
Well, we've got to keep back or they'll know they're being followed, Inspector Faraday.
All right.
Wish we could use lights. It's black tonight.
That's good. It's just as tough for them. Hey, don't get so far behind. Where are they?
Okay. Well, we'll spot them around that corner up there. Gee, they're sure going way out in the country, aren't they?
Yeah. This doesn't get results. Blackie better leave the country.
Yeah.
I don't know why I listened to him. His schemes are as phony as those jewels he had stolen from him.
Hey, we're around the corner, and where's that car?
Fine, we've lost it completely. There are six roads off this junction.
What?
Pull over to the side.
Yes, sir.
I don't see any tail light down the roads on this side.
There wasn't one on the roads off this side of the highway either. Oh, Blackie's going to be sore about this.
He's going to be sore. Blackie's going to be sore. I'm sore at Blackie. Where is he? Talks me into this, then he doesn't show up.
Well, he'll show up somewhere, Inspector. But will it be at the right place at the right time?
Please, Mr. Grant.
How's this for a place, Mr. Grant? In those woods there.
Good. Pull over.
Mr. Grant, please, please. I didn't know Blackie was carrying phony jewelry. He told me it was real.
Shut up, Louise.
I'll have a quiet in a minute, Mr. Grant.
Hey, no, you let go.
Come on out here, sister.
No.
It'll be all over in a second.
Please, Mr. Grant, I let you kill my husband and get away with it. And I gave you the letter he wanted me to turn over to the police.
She's hard to pull out of the car, Mr. Grant. Give her a shove.
No. All right.
No, no.
Thanks, Mr. Grant. That did it. Come with me, baby, because if you don't, I'll drag you.
All right, hurry up, Carter. We don't want to be parked here too long.
Why, are you afraid you'll get a ticket?
Who's that?
Oh, Blackie.
Yes, a little uncomfortable from riding on the rear bumper of your car.
Carter, stop him.
No, Carter, stop this.
Why, I'll fix you.
Oh, yes.
Grant, you're next.
Oh, I think you've got the picture wrong, Blackie. You're next.
Here it is, Grant.
See, Blackie, I told you I was afraid of this ever since that threatening phone call.
Drop the act, Mrs. Reynolds.
What?
From the time I saw you pretending to look for your husband's letter after the police had searched your house, I knew you'd soon be getting your mail care of state prison.
Oh, stop that so-called singing, Blackie. Don't you know any words?
Grant Connor and Mrs. Reynolds used when they sang to you were lyrics enough for one day, Faraday.
Mm-hmm.
Proud of me, aren't you?
No. You're proud enough of yourself for both of us.
Oh, I wasn't really so smart,
yeah,
now.
But lucky.
Grant and Mrs. Reynolds were just dumb.
Yeah.
I suspected her of hiding or destroying her husband's letter when she was still looking for it after the police failed to find it.
Thanks. You'll admit the police do a pretty thorough job, don't you?
Yes, I've always admired the police enough to stay on their side.
You admire us enough to want us to work on your murder, too?
I wasn't ever in any danger of being murdered, Faraday. Just robbed.
Mm-hmm. You know, Grant said he felt safe in grabbing those jewels from you after you told Mrs. Reynolds your plan, because you also let the word get around the underworld.
Well, that's where he was wrong, Faraday. I didn't tell anyone but Mrs. Reynolds. I was hoping to grab them when they held me up, but... Well, I guess Carter was just too fast for me.
There was a time when nobody was too fast for you, Blackie. What's the matter? You slowing up?
Maybe so. But I was still showing up every criminal in town, clever or otherwise.
If you ask me, Grant was otherwise.
Oh, I don't know. His method of getting rid of stolen jewelry was pretty clever.
Agreed.
An out-of-town buyer would go to Reynolds, say, what do you have for 10 cents? And then for 5,000, he'd get a piece of jewelry worth 10.
Yeah. Grant was so smart, he's going to spend the rest of his life in jail.
Yes, it's kind of cute, really.
Cute?
Grant's password was 10 cents, and now his life isn't worth a dime.
From September of 1948, it's been Boston Blackie and the case of the Reynolds stolen goods.
Well, that's all the time we have for today, but join us again next week and invite a friend to listen to more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, voldio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
The preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved. Thank you.
WCEA Atherton Redwood City, a broadcast service of the Sequoia Union High School District, home of Redwood High School, online at kcea.org.
such a crime, then I'm guilty. Guilty of loving you.
Sequoia Spotlight. An informative program about your schools of the Sequoia Union High School District. Saturday mornings at 8 Pacific on Big Band 89.1 KCEA. Online at kcea.org.
Shopping for shafts. Sandy Bear got mush. I tried to bust a bronco, but the bronco wouldn't buzz.
Do you ride that wild pony at the rodeo?
No, I ride that wild tenor in the Wild West show. We got a cowboy band that comes on. You love it.
Well, come on, man. Let me hear a little of it.
White and flowery, and you think
a church full of folks, and those last minute jokes, I'll buy that dream. A honeymoon in Cairo, in a brand new auto gyro, then home by rocket in a wing. We'll settle down near Dallas in a little plastic palace. It's not as crazy as you think. Imagine me on our first anniversary with someone like you in the nursery. It doesn't sound bad, and if it can be had,
a wing and a prayer. What a show!
our full crew aboard and our trust in the Lord. We're coming in on a wing and a prayer.
Folks, this is Eddie Cantor telling you that every day our boys are coming in on a wing and a prayer. They risk, many of them give their lives for victory in the air. Surely the least that we can do on the home front is to lend Uncle Sam our dollars for war bonds. No matter what we've done before, we must do more right now. Figure out the total of your family income, the money you need for necessary living expenses, and the extra for more war bonds through a payroll savings plan. Yes, figure it out for yourself, and you'll find that you can increase your purchases of war bonds every week or every payday. Your investment in victory and peace. One of our planes was missing. 2 hours overdue. One of our planes was missing with all its gallant crew. The radio set started humming. We couldn't hear a word. And suddenly through the humming, this is what we heard. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. Though there's one motor gone, we can still carry on. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. What a show! What a fight! Yes, we really hit our target for tonight. And we sing as we limp through the air. Look below, there's a field over there. With our full crew aboard and our trust in the Lord. We're coming in, we're coming in.
Thank you.
is what matters. This is beyond X's and O's. This is the difference mutual respect makes. This is what character looks like. This is what defines us in California. This is sportsmanship. School sports. It's not the outcome that matters most, but the way the games are played.
Learn more about the Sequoia Union High School District at SEQ.org. That's SEQ.org.
Gals who can shake and quake till it makes you think of a nervous snake. They're speaking of Egyptian Ella. She weighs 220, but they don't care. They like them plenty that way out there. She has the love of every fella. She does a dance, and when she starts by the River Nile, the boys all take their old sweethearts and throw them to the crocodiles. And every sheik in the audience jumps up and yells that she's immense. How they love Egyptian Ella.
Across a clouded sky, winds of January sigh and moan. And yet it's June, I can see a sky of blue. Dear, the miracle is due to you, just you. It's June in January, because I'm in love. It always is spring in my heart, with you in my arms. The snow is just white blossoms that fall from above. And here is the reason, my dear, your magical charm. The night is cold, the trees are bare, but I can feel the scent of roses in the air. It's June in January, because I'm in love. But only because I'm in love with you. bruised or bare, but I can feel the scent of roses in the air. It's June in January, because I'm in love, but only because I'm in love.